タラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタタ。
Hello and welcome. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Helen.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we are chatting about fabric dyeing. We cover different types of dyes, best practices, and the tools and supplies you will need to have success at home. Plus, we share our personal experience and our favorite tips and resources to inspire you to try your hand at fabric dyeing.
Go forth and dye fabric. Thanks to Buffy for supporting Love to Sew. Buffy makes bedding that is super comfy and super sustainable. Buffy products are made only using renewable and recycled materials, which makes them as soft on the planet as they are on your bed.
For $20 off your new favorite Buffy comforter, visit buffy.co and enter the promo code Love to Sew. And now on to the show.
Hi, Helen.
Hi, Caroline.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good.
Very good.
Yes, very good, because I'm very excited to talk about fabric dyeing.
Are you just dying to talk about fabric dyeing?
I am. I'm dying.
Okay. Die. We have a lot to cover in this week's episode, so we're going to get right into it. Starting with a question from Whitney. I love your podcast. I just found it, so I'm working through all the episodes and trying to keep up with the new ones. I'm starting to get very interested in natural dyes and shibori dyeing. I was wondering if you had a podcast or might think of one in the future that talks about dyeing, where to source good natural fabrics for dyeing. I noticed that some linens are marked as prepared for dyeing or PFD. Is that necessary to get a good dye transfer? There's mordants and fixatives. Everything seems so overwhelming for a newbie. I'm kind of a jump in with both feet kind of person, so I'm all for just diving in, but any guidance you might have would be super helpful. Whitney.
We got you, Whitney.
It's a great suggestion for an episode because it's wonderful to be able to take fabric or maybe even a garment that you've already sewn that you don't really like the color of and change it. It's also really fun to just play with color, and you can do that with dye. You can have a lot of fun just experimenting and trying different things, different types of dye, different applications for it. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think play is like a key word here, because so much of dyeing is playing around with different combinations, different materials, and it can be just such a good time. So we want to encourage you to play and not be afraid of how intimidating it might seem to get into dyeing, because there are tons of resources online, and we're going to help you out today to sort of give you a little primer, get you familiar with some of the terminology, and then you can go on and dye something.
Yeah, and you can dye a lot of different things. I think people think, oh, if I'm going to dye something, it has to be cotton or linen. But no, you can dye synthetic fibers. You can dye non-synthetic natural fibers. You can use different dyes on different applications. You can get prints and patterns. You can get solids. Really, the world is your oyster. There's so many possibilities.
You can even dye in a washing machine. You don't need to be, you know, a witch over a cauldron of hot, like a hot dye bath.
But that's the one thing I like about dyeing.
It's true. That part is amazing and I love it. But if that intimidates you, the idea of getting all these extra pots and pans and tools, you can dye in a washing machine. We're going to talk about some of your options today. So
yes.
Get ready.
It's easier than ever too with online shops like Dharma Trading Co. selling all the supplies and fabrics with ample support and instructions. Also, local shop Maiwa has great supplies and instructions on their site as well. We'll link both of those in the show notes. And check out your local shops and online shops for resources, classes, materials. It's particularly fun to do your first dyeing experience in a group setting with an instructor who knows what they're doing and can really show you the ropes and introduce you to the art of dyeing, and you'll make some friends and you'll get messy and it's a good time.
Absolutely. I encourage you to do it as a group, even if you're not doing it in a workshop setting. Get together with some friends in your backyard. It's really fun to do it where you can kind of have a meeting of the minds. Everyone is trying to decipher the instructions, figure out the steps, you're in it together, and then you can kind of do more and see more different varied results when you're doing it as a group.
Yeah.
It's not as stressful, I think, to do it with a group.
It's true. And speaking of varying results, you really have to embrace that dyeing is always a fun experiment, especially with natural dyes. You never know what you're going to get, and you have to embrace that process. Even if you use the exact same fabric, the exact same measurements of dye in the same setting, it might come out a different, slightly different shade. Yeah. And that's what's fun about it.
It really is. And I want to jump in with my top tip is to build a reference book as you go. If you think you're going to get into dyeing and try it more than once, get into the habit of keeping really detailed notes, keeping swatches of your dyed fabrics, try to keep track of what you did so that if you do want to come back to it and try to get a similar result, then at least you have a reference. And it's also just really fun to be able to look back and see this like rainbow of colors of different things that you've created,
yeah.
Show it to your friends, inspire other people to get into dyeing. It's such a great thing to have on hand.
Yeah, I love how when you dye pieces, you get some texture almost in the fabric. You get like maybe some splotches or some lines even. And that gives it this really natural, I don't know, almost worn in quality, particularly with natural dyes. It really can be such a lovely enhancement of a textile.
Yeah. I also want to mention that dyeing can take on so many different forms. There's a lot of different techniques and there's a lot of different types of dyeing methods that you can do. So you can dye a whole piece of fabric for a uniform all over a color, or at least that's what you're going to be trying to achieve is a uniform all over color. This is what we're going to be focusing on mainly today, particularly natural dyeing, because that's what we have the most experience with. And that's what we kind of enjoy the most, I think, you and I, Helen. But you can also do dip dyeing. You can create patterns with resist or shibori techniques that would involve things like wood blocks or elastics, string, rocks, or even just simply tying the fabric is a resist dyeing technique because part of that fabric is being shielded from the dye so that the dye doesn't quite get to it. And then you dip it in the dye. And then when you take it out afterwards and sort of unfurl everything, you get these portions of the fabric that isn't, you know, don't take on the dye, portions that do, and you create this beautiful pattern. So that's a really, really fun way to go about it. You can do ice dyeing, you can do marbling, you can even paint with dye. Not even to mention all of the other forms of surface design that are out there. I think we need to do a whole episode on surface design because you can also block print, screen print, discharge print. I don't know, it's a lot. But today we're going to talk about just plain dyeing.
Yeah, and maybe you have experienced dyeing doing tie-dye when you were a kid. I did some tie-dye when I was a kid at summer camps and things like that. And that's a really fun way to do it with your family, get together, you make some fun garments. It's just, you know, a lot of interesting things that you can achieve with dye.
Yeah, tie-dyeing is a resist technique.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
So what is your personal experience with dyeing, Caroline?
So I have done indigo dyeing a couple of times. I took a class, which was a few nights at our local shop, Maiwa. And then I actually did indigo dyeing with you and our friend Tasia a few years ago in your parents' backyard. That was super fun. I also took a natural dyeing class with the Blackbird team last summer when we were testing out some workshops. I really love it. I love that dyeing is a super fun and exciting and experimental process. I'm not a perfectionist, so I'm not, you know, always striving for my end piece of fabric to be like perfect and uniform. So I think it really fits well with my personality. You kind of have to let go because you can't really plan what you will get in the end. And to me, that's all part of the fun. One of my issues with dyeing is that I have yet to actually sew something up from my precious hand-dyed pieces. I can see a couple of them behind you over there. And I don't know if it's that I'm so attached to them that I'm not ready to sew them up into garments and kind of commit to that yet. Or maybe it's that I have yet to dye a piece that I feel like is super wearable. So I'm kind of waffling between those two things, but I really need to change that and just make something because, like we always say, dive into it and do it.
Yeah, totally. I have the same issue. I have made a couple of things with my dyed pieces, but I do tend to hold on to them and covet them and save them for something special. But really, it's my first few experiences with dying. So I think really they're not that special. They're just my first attempt at the process. And so I should sew them into something and celebrate it.
Yeah, definitely. So tell me about your own experience with dying.
It's pretty similar to you. Like I said, I did some tie dyeing as a kid, but as an adult, I've done the shibori dyeing that we did. And there's a whole blog post about it on my blog, so we can link that in the show notes. And we had a lot of fun doing that. Mixed results because we were trying to dye yardage and we wanted pretty big yardage. So we were trying to dye like 3 meters at a time. And when you're doing the shibori resist methods with like elastic bands or blocks, it can be difficult to do such a large piece of fabric successfully. And that was something that we all found during that process. And so I do think that if it's your first time dyeing, it's actually more fun to dye small pieces because you can really have a lot of fun experimenting with the different techniques and just see what comes out of it before you try to do a large piece. And then I took that natural dye class that you offered last year at Blackbird, which was super fun. It was really cool to be able to not only dye my own fabric, but also see what everyone else was doing because we had so many different options to choose from. I think we spent a lot of time choosing what we wanted to do. It was like she had all the swatches and it was so fun to look at them all and try to choose which one we wanted to do. It's kind of like shopping for fabric, but you're picking like an idea of a color mm-hmm. and then you're not quite sure how it's going to turn out. And the whole time that you're going through all the process of putting it in the pot and hanging it to dry and washing it and rinsing it out, you're like looking at it and wondering how it's going to turn out, but you don't know what it's going to look like until it dries. You have to wait till the very end. And the whole time is just very anticipatory feelings. Mm-hmm. So it can be a lot of fun. But yeah, I also struggle with making things from my hand-dyed pieces. I need to turn that around.
Yeah. Well, I think that we should have a dye day. I'm inspired.
I know this episode's coming out actually right before you come to visit me, my new home. So we have space. Let's do it. Let's dye some things.
I think we should.
Okay. We'll be sharing that on Instagram. Check Definitely. Us out. Fails and successes, I'm sure.
Maybe we can convince Shay and Sam to dye something as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, who doesn't want to, you know, dip things in something and pull it out and magic happens? Wonderful.
It's going to be really fun. Okay, let's go through the types of dye because that's really going to dictate the process of how you're going to dye whatever you want to dye. So there's a few different types of dye. First off, there are basic dyes. So that's your classic like RIT or eye dye that you buy in a package at a fabric store or craft supply store or online. These are more accessible because you can use your washing machine with these. A dye pot on the stove could also work. You can even do some of these in a bucket or in your sink. They don't require heat to set some of them. So the instructions are simple and included on the package. Often there's no pre-treating required and these dyes are really color fast. So this is a really great option for your first dye project. It's like low commitment, low investment. Try it out. See if you like the experience of dyeing something before you invest in all the materials to take it to kind of the next level.
Yes. And there's also fiber reactive dyes. So there's the brand Procyon, which is specific to cellulose and plant-based fibers like cotton, rayon, linen, hemp, and rami. And these are cold water dyes. So you don't need a stovetop. You don't need to be the witch over the cauldron, as we were talking about. And you're going to add some salt and or soda ash to your dye bath in addition to the Procyon dye to get results. But again, it's all usually explained on the package or you want to do some Googling and figure out how to go about it. We're not going to get into all of the details today.
Mm-hmm. And similar to fiber reactive dyes like Procyon, there are acid dyes. Acid dyes are really good for animal fibers. So protein-based fibers like wool, alpaca, mohair, silk, even nylon has really similar properties to a protein fiber. So nylon can often work with acid dyes. The brands that I know of are Ciba and Dharma Trading Co. actually has their own like house brand of acid dyes. This is generally done on a stovetop pot, and you're going to combine an acid stock solution with salt and acetic acid or vinegar. So there are a few more elements involved, but it's not quite as crazy involved as, let's say, a natural dye or an indigo dye.
Right. And speaking of natural dyes, those tend to work best on wool, silk, cotton, linen, hemp. Think natural dye, natural fiber. So you'll get different depths of color on the different fabrics. Wool and silk will have a really deep, rich color, and then it kind of goes down from there. But you can get great color on all of those natural fabrics, and it's a great way to play around with dye, and it's a little bit less toxic, although there are elements involved where you do still need to be careful with gloves and all of that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And the cool thing about natural dyes is that you can actually make your own natural dyes by using fresh or dried plant materials from your own garden. So you could have a dying garden, like not the plants are dying, but like the plants are for dying. Or you can forage plant materials. So it's something that you could kind of DIY at home and make it a little bit low investment, or even just, you know, feel like you have a little bit more of a hand in the whole entire process from start to finish if you're growing your own plants and flowers to use for dyeing. I think that's so cool.
It's very cool. And you can purchase already ground up raw materials or extracts online at dye stores. Examples of natural dyes are Brazil wood, cochineal, chamomile, kutch, logwood, madder, marigold, osage, and there's many, many more. I used logwood when I did my natural dyeing class, and it gives this beautiful gray, blue, navy, lots of depth in that one. I also loved the results with the marigold, these bright chartreuse yellows, and then the, I think it was the madder that gives you that deep red, rusty tones, and all very natural colors, in the natural color spectrum. They give that feeling of, you know, like a looking at a garden or a sunshine or an ocean. Like they have those, that depth.
Yeah. And I also love all of the different colors that you can get from natural dye. And even if you don't love the color right off the bat, you can kind of adjust it with different techniques. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later. One thing to keep in mind is that although natural dyes are natural, in some ways they're not the most environmentally friendly because they use a lot of water in the dyeing process. There's a lot of rinsing involved. There's a lot of dipping involved. So just keep that in mind. But I personally prefer natural dyeing over all other forms of dye.
Yeah, and I've seen also people using actual flowers and leaves to get dyeing or staining results. Like with marigold, you can take the leaves and lay them out and press cloth onto them, and it will leave an imprint of that beautiful marigold color. So there's so many fun things you can do.
Mm-hmm. So indigo is a whole other dye all in itself, and it doesn't really conform to a lot of the techniques that we're going to be discussing today. I'm going to go through a little bit of a general process for dyeing, and indigo is a little bit different. It's a bit more complicated. So there are some great indigo dyeing tutorials online. We're going to link some of our favorites in the show notes. Seamwork has a really great article, so we'll link all that. And I mean, we loved indigo dyeing. We encourage you to try it out. It's just a little bit more complicated, so we're not going to get too deep into it today.
Mm-hmm. And also another thing we see a lot of online is avocados, black beans, turmeric. They're all amazing for playing around with color, but they're not actually natural dyes. They're stains. So they're not color fast, and they will degrade and fade over time. But that doesn't mean you can't use them. They're still so much fun. With avocados, you get that beautiful millennial pink. Mm-hmm. And turmeric, you get that lovely gold. Black beans, I'm assuming, is, you know, like a deep brown.
It's actually purple.
Oh, purple.
Yeah.
Oh, fun.
Right?
Cool.
I know. So I mean, I think they're super fun to play around with. And depending on the application, it probably doesn't matter that they're the most light fast or color fast, wash fast. Mm-hmm. You know, it's probably fine for certain things.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So what kind of tools would one need if you wanted to try dyeing?
Yeah. So generally speaking, obviously, you're going to want the item that you want to dye. So that could be a finished good or fabric, yarn. That's going to be the first step. Figure out what you want to dye. That might indicate what type of dye you want to use. If you're using a natural dye, you're going to need a mordant. We're going to talk a little bit more about mordant in a second, so bear with me. You're also going to need the dye stuff. So whatever type of dye that you're going to use, you need to get that and make sure that you have the correct quantity for the weight of material that you're dyeing. For the whole weighing process and measuring process, you're going to want a kitchen scale and or measuring spoons. You probably want a large stock pot with a lid if you're going to be using the stovetop method for dyeing. If not, just like a deep sink, even a bathtub, you know, some kind of a pail or bucket could work really well. A large plastic bucket for soaking and rinsing. So in addition to that stovetop pot, you also need something to rinse in. Wooden spoon or paddle for stirring. That's the whole witch in the cauldron. You want to get
tongs too.
Yeah, tongs are great for pulling fabric out of a hot bath as well. And then heavy duty heat safe gloves, especially if you're working with that hot pot of water. Those gloves, you want them to like go up to your elbow. Because if you reach in and you get that, you know, maybe you're protected up to, I don't know,
forearm.
That's what that's called. Maybe you're protected up to your forearm, but if you just have like a little slip and go too far, that hot water is going to just trickle into your glove and it'll be horrible. So just make sure you're using really heavy duty long gloves up to your elbow if you can find them.
Love it. It sounds pretty approachable as far as materials. I also loved at the workshop you guys had just single burners that were, mm-hmm. you know, it's not a stovetop. It's just one burner. You plug it in. And I'm thinking for a lot of people, if they have a garage or something like that, it's a lot easier to do this kind of stuff outside. You're not making a big mess. So having just a single burner that you can stick anywhere, you don't have to be in your kitchen, makes a huge difference.
Yeah, like backyard, patio, garage, driveway,
yeah,
balcony, exactly. I think all of those things are great.
Parking garage.
You definitely need a place with proper ventilation. So if your kitchen doesn't have a window or a really good exhaust fan, I would not recommend dying in your kitchen, because even with natural dyes, there are off-gassing and like fumes that will come up that are just like not good to breathe in. Mm-hmm. But we'll mention that again a little bit later. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the general steps that you're going to go through when you dye an item. Obviously, this is going to vary depending on the type of dye that you're using. This is pretty specific to natural dyeing. I think it applies to actually a lot of different dyes, but I'm adding in a couple extra steps in here that apply to natural dyeing. So the first step is scouring, and this is the process of pre-washing your fabric with the appropriate soap so that you're preparing it for the dye bath. I say appropriate soap because different types of dye will recommend different soap types for the scouring process. But the reason why you scour your fabrics is it allows them to take the dye more easily and have more depth of color and be more light fast and wash fast. So it's just cleaning off any kind of residue from the production of the fabric, any kind of finishing that might be on it, any kind of chemicals on the surface, you're stripping that away so that the fiber is ready to absorb the dye. Some fabrics might be marked prepared for dye or PFD. This sometimes means that you don't need to scour them. I would say if you're using a fabric often and you know that the PFD is good and that it's ready to go, that's fine. But it's always good to scour it anyways, especially if it's your first time using that type of fabric, or at least do a test just in case. Because I think one of the most important things is making sure that you're preparing your fabric so that it absorbs that dye the best that it can and gets that really nice depth of color.
Definitely. And that's kind of what the mordanting process also helps with natural dyes. So we talked about applying or adding your mordant during the natural dye process. And mordanting is a soaking process that helps your natural dyes become color fast. And mordants are metallic salts that bond the dye to the fiber. Cellulose fibers also require a tannin in order to bond well. Both metallic salts and tannins are classified as mordants. So there are different mordant options and they produce different results, and you need to use different mordant options depending on what fabric you're dyeing and what natural dye you're using. So that's where the experimentation can come in. But again, there are resources online, charts and things that will tell you which one you should try with which one to get the best results. But if you're doing a natural dye, you need to have some kind of mordant.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about mordants is that depending on the type of mordant that you use, a marigold might look green or it might look yellow depending on the mordant, or a madder might be, you know, wildly different color if you use a different type of mordant. So it's really fun to experiment with different mordants and see what the results of the actual natural dye come out to afterwards. This episode is brought to you by Buffy. Do you want to sleep in a perfect, soft, fluffy cloud? Then you want a Buffy comforter. We're both hot sleepers. Our partners are both hot sleepers. Freddy and Pepper are both hot sleepers. Not a problem. Buffy comforters keep you at the perfect temperature all night long.
The Buffy Cloud Comforter is made out of eucalyptus, which uses 10 times less water than cotton to grow. And this ultra-breathable fiber is produced using recyclable, earth-friendly solvents. The inside fill of each Buffy comforter is made from 100% recycled water bottles, and every comforter keeps approximately 50 bottles out of landfills and oceans.
Do you want to try a Buffy comforter for yourself? Well, they offer a free trial so you can take it home, try it on your own bed, and if you aren't in love, return it at no cost.
Buffy also has a special offer for Love to Sew listeners. For $20 off your Buffy comforter, visit buffy.co and enter the promo code Love to Sew. That's buffy.co, promo code Love to Sew for $20 off. And dyeing, of course, is the main part of the process, the magical part, taking a fabric that has no color and watch it take on a gorgeous hue. Generally, this involves soaking your fabric in the dye bath, be that hot or cold, depending on the dye, for an extended period of time. And remember that as a fabric dries, the color will lighten. So the longer you leave it in the dye bath, typically the more color it's going to take on, the darker the color is going to get. But remember that as the fabric dries, the color will lighten. So it might look quite dark when it's wet, which can be misleading. And then you dry it and it's totally different. We had that experience with our Shibori dye where we were like, oh, we've got this amazing navy, indigo, blue. And then we put it on the line to dry. And a few hours later, it was like this very light, like sky blue, which was also beautiful, but it was interesting to see that process change. And the whole time you're just kind of watching it, you're waiting to see what the final result's going to be.
Yeah. Generally, the longer you leave your piece in to soak in the dye, the deeper the color. So if you have the time to leave it in for hours and hours, then do that because you're going to get that really deep depth of color. It's just your best bet is the longer, the better. And also make sure that you stir and agitate often so that the dye distributes evenly and there's no dye that kind of gets caught in some folds and maybe creates darker portions. So you want to keep stirring that cauldron and making sure that you're agitating that textile or yarn so that you get an even distribution of dye.
Yeah. I think if you want a light color or almost a faded look, then by all means, don't soak it for very long.
True.
You know, depends on what you're after.
That's definitely true. Okay. So you can further change the color of a natural dye with a final soak in a modifier such as iron or even an over dye. So that would be just a whole other dye pot. So keep in mind that if you don't love the color initially after you take it out of your first dip, you can totally try again.
Yeah. You can re-dip. And you don't need to do it immediately. You can do it next day, next week. It's okay. You can change it as you go along, which is really cool. And it's amazing the different results you can get by pairing like a logwood with a madder. You get purpley. It's just cool.
Yeah. I remember when we were doing our natural dye, I mean, I might get these facts wrong, but one type of dye, you would dip it in and it was one color, like purple, I think. And then you dip it into an iron bath and it turns like army green.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
I think that's the marigold one. It's like yellow and then it's like green. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
Totally the difference is really amazing with the iron dip.
Yeah. And then after you dye, you want to gently wash your fabric in lukewarm water without soap. So make sure you're removing any lingering dye stuff. So that would be like residue or raw material powder kind of sitting on your fabric. And depending on the dye, you may need to use a special soap to properly rinse it out. And just make sure that you're rinsing as well as you can. You don't necessarily have to do that in a sink. You can also just do it in like buckets of water. So fill a bucket, soak, wring it out, fill a new bucket, soak. And then when your water runs clear, you know that you've rinsed it out enough. Mm-hmm. And then you let the fabric dry completely.
Yeah.
And then it's ready to use.
It's ready to use. You're all good to go.
Yeah. You can also wash and dry the fabric to kind of set the dye, but it's not necessary. And if you do that, remember that the dye might fade a little bit. So keep that in mind.
But if you dry it, say on a line and it's fully dry and then you sew something out of it, is it going to fade the first time you wash it?
I think as long as you don't wash it for a few weeks, the color sets up better and then it'll like remain a little bit darker.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
But once it's kind of faded that first initial time in the wash, it's color fast.
It should be. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a question here from a listener, Kimberly. In a recent cotton episode, I heard Helen mention a dress she wanted to dye that has a poly thread, but a linen cotton fabric. I similarly have a baby blue linen dress that I want to over dye to a dark navy, but I used a light blue poly thread. After all this talk about color, I realized I don't wear it because of the color. Can you double over dye something, use a dye that will work on the natural fiber for the fabric, and then dye it again with what will work for the poly of the thread? Or could you dump in two types of dye at the same time that will dye both at the same time? Would love some help with this.
So I did a little bit of research when we got this question from Kimberly, and it does seem possible to combine two types of dye in one dye pot, but I would recommend using the same brand. So if you're using a brand like Rit or iDye, they have packets for both synthetic fibers and natural fibers, often in almost identical colors or really similar colors. So if you combine those two packets in the same dye pot, I think you're good to go. It's the same brand. They even talk about it on their website. But you could also do two separate dye pots if you want to be really safe. So dye it first in the synthetic fiber dye to dye the thread and then dye it again in the same color dye, but for the natural fiber so that you color your cotton fabric and then hopefully you're going to get all the same color.
Yeah.
It's still a risk. It's still an experiment. Like with all dyeing, you don't really know the results. But I think for Kimberly, because she's not wearing the garment anyways, what do you have to lose?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I still have not dyed that white dress from my friend's wedding. And I want to because it's a beautiful dress and I don't know when I'm going to wear this white dress again. So maybe I'll try that. And if you have some fabric left over, you could sew some synthetic stitches onto that fabric and maybe you can recreate that textile and do a test.
Yeah.
Or a few tests and see what happens.
That's a good idea. Test, test, test.
Okay, let's go over some best practices and safety tips for people. So have your own set of tools and pots and supplies that are just for dyeing. And try not to mix these, or actually don't mix these with your cooking tools. Don't make your stock pot your dye pot and vice versa. You want to have a fresh set of tools. And you know what? You can go to a thrift store and get a good big pot to use. It doesn't need to be fancy.
It definitely doesn't need to be fancy. And this applies even to natural dyes. So even if you're using plants or flowers to dye, you're still using certain, you know, solutions to help fix the dye or the mordants. And you just really want to keep those supplies separate so that you're not contaminating your food.
Mm-hmm. And you want to wear gloves. We mentioned that. Not have your skin in contact with the dyes or the hot water so you don't burn yourself or dye your hands. Just, you know, be safe, wear the gloves.
Yeah. Proper ventilation is also a big thing. You want to make sure that you have your windows open, a really good exhaust fan if you're doing this in your kitchen. Better yet, don't do it in your kitchen. Do it outside. Do it in your garage. Do it somewhere where you can have a really good airflow going because that's going to create the best environment for you, for your health. It's really important.
Mm-hmm. And don't put dry fabric into a dye bath. No drying. No dye drying. No dry dyeing.
No dry dyeing.
No dry dyeing, people. Always soak it first, and it's going to take the dye so much better. It's already wet. It's going to be able to just soak up that dye.
Definitely. And keep in mind that if you're dyeing piece goods or garments, the thread will often not dye the same as the fabric. We've already mentioned this, but it's worth reiterating that if you're sewing up a garment that you think you might dye, use a thread that is a similar or the same fiber as the fabric itself. So use a cotton thread for cotton, use a poly thread for poly, etc.
Yes. And please follow the instructions specific to your dye type or the instructions on the packet of dye. We covered a lot today and every dye type is different. So it's important to look up the specific method for your dye. Don't listen to this episode and try to follow along to dye something. Yeah. There's lots of instructions that are going to give you a way better idea of how to get a good result.
So I want to give a little shout out to Natasha because she helped us a lot with prepping for this episode and just giving me some facts that she knows because she's really experienced with dyeing. And she also sent us a list of some of her favorite resources and books and people to follow in the dyeing world. And we're going to recap some of them right here.
The first book is called Wild Color and it's the revised edition by Jenny Dean.
Yes, we actually have that one in our library at Blackbird, and I love it. It's really beautiful, I bet. She shows a lot of examples of natural dye, so I think it's a really great one to have in your library. We also love The Modern Natural Dyer by Christine Vejar. She is actually the owner of A Verb for Keeping Warm, which is a really cool company. And we are also going to recommend that you follow them on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. And Indigo, Cultivate, Dye, Create by Douglas Luhanco and Kirsten Neumuller.
Also, Botanical Color at Your Fingertips by Rebecca Desnos. This one is really popular. She uses avocado and stuff for dyeing. So if you're into that, this is a great resource.
And Stitch Shibori by Jane Callender, a fun book about hand-stitched shibori. I've seen this book. Holy, is Stitch Shibori ever amazing. You actually sew patterns and then you pull the thread tight and it scooshes the fabric, scooches all together, and then that is the resist. So when you remove those stitches, you get these beautiful patterns. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, we tried a little bit of that at our class at Maiwa, and I loved it.
Yeah,
so cool. There's also a book called A Perfect Red by Amy Butler Greenfield. That's a really fun book about the history of red dye.
Ooh, specifically red dye.
Mm-hmm.
What is the history?
I don't know. You have to read the book to find out.
So following on Instagram, go follow Rebecca Desnos, Botanical Colors.
A verb for keeping warm, which is actually AVFKW on Instagram.
At Indigo Social and at Maiwa School of Textiles.
That's our local place that we love. There's also Prophet of Bloom. That's India Flint's Instagram. And Spin Cycle Yarns. They do naturally dyed yarns. Love them.
Love supplies from Dharma Trading Co. and from Maiwa Supply, and also from We Gather. Wonderful little Brooklyn operation, sells dye kits, super fun. Get everything you need in a small package.
Yeah, love Whitney from We Gather. And then I also loved Seam Work has this archive with all of their dyeing and surface design articles, and there are actually quite a few. And I really loved looking through this when I was prepping for this episode because there are some great resources, lots of great information on there.
Mm-hmm. So what do you want to dye?
Ooh, I think we should dye some piece goods.
Yeah, what is that?
So you can actually buy blanks online of things like neck scarves or napkins or pillowcases or tote bags. They're already done for you. They're already prepared for dye. Dharma Trading Co. sells them. Maiwa sells them. So I want to make like some cute little neck scarves and maybe some napkins.
Yeah, some smaller pieces so we can really have fun with different resists and different colors. Maybe we can have a few different baths going and I can just imagine them all like hanging up on the line.
Yeah.
Super, super fun.
I think that's a really great option, like buying the blanks and using that for your first dyeing experience as well, because it's less pressure and you get to use it right away instead of having like a fabric sitting in your stash and having to avoid sewing it up like we have.
Maybe I'll try and sew one of mine up before this episode drops.
Oh, imagine if we dye in your new house backyard in our newly handmade garments that we made out of something that we dyed.
I don't think you're like supposed to wear special dyeing things inception. When you dye.
I dyed this and now I'm dyeing that and I'm wearing it.
Very meta.
Yeah.
The other thing that you need, which we didn't even mention, just thought of, is an apron.
Oh my gosh, definitely.
And you can make an apron so easily. It's such a fun sewing project. There's so many designs out there and you can have a lot of fun. You don't even need a pattern. You can just put one together.
Definitely.
Great. You can have a lot of fun with that. And I love apron style. And there's something nice about dyeing aprons. They get color all over them. Kind of like pottery aprons too. They get all dirty. And there's just, or painting aprons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super fun.
Okay. You, me, your house, aprons, blanks, Shay and Sam, it's going to be a party. See you there.
Oh my gosh. That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. You can find me, Helen, at helenscloset.patterns.com and Caroline at blackbirdfabrics.com.
We're recording today in sunny Vancouver, Canada, and you can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
If you're enjoying the show and you want to help us out, you can support us on Patreon. Contribute $5 or more a month and you'll get access to our bonus episode feed. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info.
Thank you to our amazing podcast team, Sam Humphrey and Melanie Brister. And thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Do you think our listeners are going to think that we all share a bed? Like me, you, Sam, Shay, Pepper, and Frady.
Adorable.